Welcome to another episode of Thoughts of a Techno Wizard, Techno Shaman, and Arco Futurist, and other cool stuff too. It is Friday, April 26th, 12:07 p.m. 2024. Yes. I took PTO today, so, you know, just chilling, just learning, trying to take breaks, take more breaks and stuff like that. I'm in one of these Discord groups by this channel. I think I talked about them before. I definitely have, called Andrewism. It's a really great channel. Pretty cool Discord. A lot of smart folks with a lot of cool ideas and all this other stuff. And it's been pretty awesome. But I feel like oftentimes in these sorts of channels where folks, you know, trying to build better futures and things like that, it's definitely a problem, but specifically, how I want to say this, like, you can see the frustration in a lot of people, right? And in terms of, a lot of us, like myself, wanted to work at, oh my gosh, am I calling me? I'm damn getting started. All right, 1 second. Okay, I probably could restart, but I'm not, because this is what this is, you know, raw, unrefined, unedited, real life, raw. I don't know what's wrong with me. yes, I wanted to, this conversation I had in the Discord really sparked something that was been inside my brain for a while, but I haven't really, you know, fleshed out. And I began writing about it because I would love to, like, turn this into a newsletter or and eventually a video and more and beyond and stuff like that. But, you know, this is like the first, I think talking about it like this helps me a lot to kind of flesh it out. So a couple things came up. One is like the frustration of when people want to do something good, right, in the world, they want to do something meaningful, but they don't want to contribute to the same bullcrap, you know, that is, you know, infesting the world, right? Like, for instance, somebody in there who's getting a PhD, and they don't want to work, you know, at a typical place, at some, you know, capitalist place, or exploiting people, or this, that, and the other, but, you know, there's, with all that work and effort going into that, like, what kind of careers can they get into that will, you know, pay off, unfortunately, the debt that you take in order to get that amount of education, right? And that also came up, you know, a couple weeks ago with my partner. Like, she I told you she's in getting a math degree because she's really enjoying it, and there's, you know, some interesting things she wants to be able to do with it. But in terms of, like, traditional careers, like, you know, the current careers out there, there's not much you can really do on the kind of revolutionary side. You know, a lot of the viable careers, at least quote unquote viable careers, we'll get to that shortly, for something like a math degree, for instance, especially at a higher level, is like, you know, some crazy statistics and data analysis and, you know, insurance or some bullshit like that. You know, maybe you can, if you want to go more computer science side, maybe you can get into the, or I guess more hardware side, kind of like the engineering aspect of it, or, you know, again, kind of like data science, but more machine learning. You know, of course, there's plenty of opportunities there, but a lot of people in the space, like my partner, does not want to get into that. Like, they want to be able to help people with it. She feels like she should be able to, like, teaching other people math and, you know, building products and ideas and things like that that help people on a regular basis. And I, of course, have ideas on how to use that, you know, what use cases those can be. But still, on a broad scale, or even just an individual level, it can be very difficult to figure out, you know, how to give back in a meaningful way. How to survive in a meaningful way, or rather, how to survive in an ethical way, right? How to help other people, and so on and so forth. So, And then on the other side of that is the fact that the story that we've been told, you know, and it's falling apart a lot recently, but still the story that you still kind of are being told today is that, you know, you get a better education, you know, go to school, get more school, then you eventually get a career where you'll be able to make a lot of money, or at least make a living, you'd hope. but that is not true, right? I think even with the leading data, the people who go to higher education typically make more money in the long tail of things than people who don't. But that sort of statistic is misleading, because it's not necessarily that the people who go to higher education are necessarily, you know, better off. It could very much be that they tend to be more privileged, and so on average it skews towards them. And I'm not sure if there's been a study that really controls for that. I'm not sure if it's possible to control for that. But even so, even if it does, like, you know, there's still the fact that even those who do get a higher education and do make more money than those that have not got a higher education still struggle, right? They still, a lot of folks with a higher education, with all these higher degrees and stuff like that, still struggle to make a living. And doubly so if you want to make a living, again, in an ethical way, right? Building good organizations or products or services or whatever that actually help other people rather than exploit more than it actually helps. And then another side to all this is the fact that if you do just want to help people, right, regardless of what your degrees are, what you know, whatever, if you just want to help people, it can be pretty hard to do that too, right? Because our current society does not make that necessarily easy to do, right? You have to worry about your own survival, so you can't spend a whole lot of time helping other people. And sometimes it can be difficult to even find people who need help, or not necessarily who need help, but who you can help. I'll say it like that, right? You may be able to walk down the street and find a homeless person, but can you actually help them? Like, what can you do for them, right? Like, you might be able to give them a couple of bucks, but like, you can't build a home for them. You can't buy a home for them. You know, you can't pay off their medical debts. You can't, you know, if they have mental, you know, problems that they're dealing with, like, you may not be equipped for any of that, right? And all of that, to me, is just bonkers. It's just crazy that it's so hard to help people. It's so hard to help ourselves. It's so hard to feel like we can live in a community, right? I often come back to that word, and somebody was mentioning how this can feel like a fetishization of that concept, of that word. But I mean, in some ways I do understand, because again, we often use that word. We got to build community, this, that, and the other. You hear that all the time in these spaces. But at the same time, it's also very true, right? And a big problem is that we don't even, on a broad scale, we don't really know what community is anymore, right? We don't really know what that looks like, what that should feel like. And I think a big reason why a lot of people are still trying to build community and using that as like the goal is because I think many of us have I think it's a core aspect of being human, right? I think, and I've talked about this, you know, in terms of human evolution, but and you can see this if you study, you know, any anthropology, archaeology, or whatever, but you see that the evolution of humans corresponded very strongly with communities, right? With the development of communities. But again, we don't really know what that means today. And, you know, we'd like to think it means, I think part of the problem of viewing communities as the end-all be-all is if you don't define communities well enough, right? If you think a community is just like an interest group, right? Or just a neighborhood, you know, some people that you live with or something like that, that's not a community, right? Even a Discord server, that's not a community, right? A friend group even, that might not be a community, right? A community is specifically a group of people who come together with intention, right? Who care for each other and can help each other and regularly do, right? A community is a space and environment in which you feel constantly supported, in which you can, you know that your needs will be met somehow, some way, because somebody's looking out for you, because, you know, the community has figured out a way, like these group of people have figured out a way to provide for each other, right? A community is a space in which I feel like we've devolved from, we've fallen from, we've maladapted away from, right? We've corrupted, we've destroyed, we've weakened to the point where a community is today just thought of as like an interest group. And I think that's very concerning. So some ways in which this is coming together in my head is kind of looking at nature, right? Of course, it always it comes back to nature. If you look at trees, for instance, right? A lot of people, especially, and this is especially true in the last century or two or so, in Western civilizations, is a lot of people view trees as like these individual creatures that are constantly in competition with all the other trees, you know, fighting for water, for sunlight, for this, that, and the other, you know. And similar thing to pretty much any animals, right? It's the whole idea of evolution being driven by competition. But what we actually see, and modern science is proving this out, right, is that a bigger driver to survival is not competition. It's not even a competitive advantage. Just like, at least as simplistically seen as an individual winning out over other individuals, right? It's often seen as cooperation, right? Trees are not individual creatures, right? They don't live in isolation, right? They're connected to pretty much all the other trees in their vicinity through fungal networks, right? I've talked about this as well. These fungal networks allows a tree to not only communicate with other trees in a more intimate way, because they can also communicate through chemicals and stuff like that that they release through their leaves or this, that, and the other, but they also connect through these, they also communicate through these fungal networks, right? But what's so interesting about this communication is that not only can a tree ask for resources, and yes, we've shown, we don't know exactly how the communication works, but we've shown that there is some back and forth communication. So it seems like they not only do they ask for resources, but when as soon as they're connected, right, as long as they're connected, I should say, other trees can give them resources, can give another tree a resource without being asked, right? They have some method of seeing or understanding or whatever, like I'm not sure if we even have a good perceiving, I guess, if another tree needs a certain resource, right? And they can pass on that nutrients to that tree through this fungal network. Just think about how amazing that is. Like, these trees are connected together, and not only can any individual tree ask for resources and get them, but it can also receives resources without, it doesn't necessarily have to ask, right? It just receives those resources, right? At the same time, other animals behave in a similar way, but in a different manner, right? And what I mean by that is, an animal doesn't have to, you know, in order for an animal to get resources, for instance, there's specific places it can go. It knows it can go. Right? Maybe it learns that through, most of them don't learn it through generations, unfortunately. They have to kind of learn that as they go. But they learn that by living, right? And that they can go to the water, like a big center point for a lot of animals is water features, right? A river, a lake, a shoreline, and so on like that. They can go there and not only receive water as other resources, but if they're a predator, right, that's a good way of finding other resources, which are the other animals, right? But on top of that, a lot of animals behave in a cooperative manner, right? They get along with other animals of other species and can create these symbiotic relationships, right? And so nature has many different ways of cooperating, and yet we've somehow created a society in which it's harder to cooperate, in which it's harder to get resources, in which it's harder to share resources, and so on and so forth, right? We use this thing as money, and it's supposed to, the conceit, right, the story, the idea of money is supposedly supposed to, you know, be a way to one of the best ways to distribute resources, right, as widely as possible and as quote unquote efficiently as possible. And yet on a day-to-day basis, it often instead acts as a barrier to resources, right, to make it makes it harder for the average person to get the resources that they need. And then on top of that, because of the system of capitalism, right, it commoditizes those resources and privatizes them. So it makes it even harder to get access to what you need and to cooperate, because, you know, it reinforces, it incentivizes competition at the cost of cooperation, right? Where it's actually more efficient to not cooperate with others, to try and, you know, greed things and stuff like that. Or on the other hand, to only cooperate with a specific people in order to form, you know, an oligopoly, right? Or a monopoly, right? And that's deeply concerning, because if you really think about it, what that means is we've taken the world, and we've taken this world, and which has evolved millions of species, billions upon trillions of species that can get whatever resources they need. And yes, there's difficulties of that, of course, obviously. But by and large, many, many creatures can get resources just by living life, right? By going around, finding something and eating it, you know, cooperating with others, forming these relationships, and so on and so forth. So you would think that we can learn from this. We can take this and kind of make it better, if I may be so arrogant here. Or so ambitious here, right? That's the we think of ourselves as better or as more evolved, even though that's not accurate, right? But we think of ourselves as such, and yet we've created a world in which is less efficient than the way that nature is able to distribute resources as widely as possible, and less efficiently as nature is able to facilitate cooperation and so on and so forth. So I'm looking at all this, I'm thinking, like, how can we make it easier for people to cooperate? How can we make it easier for people to help each other? How can we make it easier for people to get resources that they need, right? And I think we've actually gotten close at different points in time. So, for instance, you know, just a couple decades ago, or even a decade ago, like, the internet was closer to that than it is now. In that, if you wanted to find a job, for instance, where you can, you know, work with cool people and this, that, and the other, not only did you have to, like, you didn't have to just depend on, like, job boards or something like that, which kind of, you know, make it harder to find what you want, because... because it's a kind of closed market of people. Usually a lot of job boards are, you know, focused on, like, it's more transactional, it's more, you know, you don't see a whole lot of nonprofits there, or if you do, you know, they're not it's harder to see, you know, if there will be a good place to work, for instance. But what was interesting was, like, for instance, with old Twitter, right, it was much easier to network with people, right? You can find people of your interest in the, like, the field that you're interested in, or that were doing cool work, that were cool people, and you can, like, reach out to them on social media. And that was a great way of finding opportunities in a different manners than you could today. Even LinkedIn was a little bit better for that. But now it's become... again, not only more transactional, but also more quite frankly, full of crap. So it's harder to really filter through and connect with people in a meaningful way. Prior to that, right, you had this idea of, like when you hear folks like Douglas Rushkoff talk about the internet in the 90s, right, you had this, I forgot what they called it, but like a gopher server or whatever, but basically this central place where everybody on the internet can go to find resources, right, or to find, you know, how to tap in or to find other people, this, that, and the other. And it's interesting that even though the internet is bigger than ever, and even though you have these services that should have a better network than ever, it's harder than ever to actually connect with people in a meaningful way. Right? And the huge reason for that is because, once again, the commoditization of stuff, the advertising, you know, tyranny and stuff like that, where everything is geared towards, you know, how to make money. And so it takes away from the idea of how to actually connect with people. And then, of course, dating, you know, if you go further back before the internet and stuff like that, if people wanted to connect, they can do so in these third places, right? In these buildings or you know, locations and stuff like that, where they can meet other people and just shoot the shit, you know, just talking and everything like that. Many revolutions and rebellions throughout history were started in, like, taverns, for instance, and these sorts of establishments where it had a very low bar for people to meet, right? Or it was very accessible in terms of a place where people of different walks of life can all meet together. In fact, that was one of the major, you know, draws of cities. It's like, despite the fact that it was loud and obnoxious and dirty and, you know, all this other stuff, it was an easy place for people to connect, to meet other people of all sorts of, you know, backgrounds and things like that. And therefore, you can create more things together, right? So it was like the ability to cooperate with more people than ever before overwhelmed the downsides of pretty much everything else about a city. And, you also had the upsides, I should say, of, like, infrastructure and stuff like that, being able to share, build projects together and stuff like that. But a lot of that is itself a result of cooperation, right? Of being able to cooperate on a larger scale. But it seems like we've lost that. We have bigger cities than ever before, and yet more feelings of more isolation than ever before. So, you know, when I look at all this, you can ask what went wrong, but I've said it many times before. It's, you know, capitalism, the money transactions, or transactionalism, I guess you can say, hierarchy, you know, all of that are barriers to cooperation. And so what can we do about it, though, right? To me, I feel like what we can do is try to emulate nature, right? Again, because trees are all connected in these microhorizon networks, it's kind of like the internet. But unlike the internet, right, you can actually pass nutrients, right, in this network. In the same network that you communicate, you can also do mutual aid, essentially, right? And so what I'm wondering is, like, how can we, for instance, replicate that? Like, create an internet where, or you use the internet, redesign it such that not only can you communicate with other people, but it's super easy to give people nutrients, to give people help, resources that they need, right? A big barrier to that right now is the idea that you have to have this, you know, essentially advertisement type of method of communicating with people, right? You have to put out your message, hope somebody responds and basically gives you stuff, right? Based on how well they like your message, right? And that's true for even if you're in like a once again, a Discord community, or if you're on a social media platform or whatever, right? But what if instead we can have a network where you can proactively see the help that people need, right? You can see, you know, people, you know, need housing needs or this type of food or a job or, you know, this, that, and the other. And so you can say, oh, I can provide this, or I know somebody who can help provide this proactively, and you can facilitate that. You can go ahead and just initiate that, all right? Of course, you have concerns over privacy and this, that, and the other, but I think a lot of that comes down to the culture, right? In terms of, like, if you have a network, for instance, let's go back to a community, right? Or even outside of that, let's go to a neighborhood, because everybody can relate to this, right? If you live in a neighborhood or apartment complex or whatever, right, you have this ability to see, you know, on a surface level, what people's lives are kind of like, right? Very, very surface level. Like, you can kind of see, you know, what type of car they have, or you can see, you know, the state of repair that their house is in. You know, might see if they come out on a regular basis to go to work, stuff like this. And that's not necessarily a breach of privacy, or like, you're not going to do anything with that information, all right? If you want it to be a good neighbor, what do? Right? You find a way to meet up with them. You go knock on their door, say, hey, I'm the neighbor next door, whatever, I like to be friends, or let's chat, let's do a thing, right? And this alone right here, this part right here, is unfortunately so foreign to a lot of people and so difficult that it's not even done very often. But there are ways in which you can facilitate that, right? You can help that. Is you can create these neighborhood events, right? Whether if you have like a neighborhood planning committee or something like that, you can plan a group, a neighborhood-wide event, or you could just do one personally, right? You could just, like what my family often does, you know, do a barbecue. And because my dad loves to talk to people, we'd be like, hey, yeah, you want to come to my barbecue? Right? He just goes with it. And so, you know, I have not talked to any of my neighbors unless, you know, they've already here and I talk to them in that way. Like, I never initiated anything like that. But what I do is, you know, as an extremely introverted person, sometimes I just leave myself open to communicate, to talk with people. Like I mentioned before, when I started this community and friend group that I have now, is I was in an Uber and a Lyft, and we were just talking. You know, like, you're in an Uber, they're like, oh, what do you do? And usually I'm just like, oh yeah, I do this. I design stuff, right? But I went into detail there, and they asked more questions, and I went further into detail, right? So I could have easily just shut it down and just be like, oh yeah, just do this, it's cool, right? Keep it moving. But, you know, I felt like this person was genuine, was authentic or whatever. And I just kept myself open, and that conversation ended up being a really good one, and we ended up being friends, and now, like, we might even live together in a few months. Like, there are different ways to form these communities. But all that to say that I think we can make this process easier, right? We should make this process easier. So once again, you're in this neighborhood or in this apartment or whatever. And so what if we can have like a sort of notice board, or a town hall or something like that, right? Or a website or whatever it feels appropriate for you to build out. And unfortunately, this is something probably you, as the person that cares about this, is probably going to have to be the one that initiates it. But I do want to say, like, again, it doesn't have to be in a way that is too outside of your comfort zone. It's going to be a little bit outside your comfort zone, but not too outside of that. And what I mean by that is, like, once again, because I am not an extroverted person, I am not going to build a notice board where I'd be like, hey, yeah, everybody come put your knees on this notice board. Like, what I would do is start very small and build, like what I'm doing now, is do like a pool or susu, where every month we give a certain amount of money to one of the people in the group, right? Like, each of us has a little bit of money, and we all just give to one person. Another thing we do is like do regular talking events, right? Where we say, in 2 weeks we're going to talk about this, you know, this very intimate thing. Like, how do you deal with conflict, or how do you deal with you know, emotions, or how do you want to be, you know, helped in your, when you're in a bad time, or this, that, and the other, right? And so we set those topics up, schedule them out, and then we talk. And from that comes a whole lot of other stuff that helps us to get closer together and understand how to help each other more and how to be there for each other more. So all that to say, I think more of us needs to do these sorts of things in our communities, and or rather in our whatever space that you're in order to make it a community, right? And so yeah, that going back to the whole fungal network thing, I think that can percolate, that can turn into this network where we're proactively looking, we're both on two sides, proactively looking to help people as well as proactively, you know, showing people how we can be helped, right? To make it easier for people to know, okay, this is what they need and this is what I can provide, right? This is how I can help them. And again, it's going to be difficult, especially in our current kind of landscape, but it should not be transactional, right? The idea here is not to be like, oh, I helped you, so now you help me. It's more like, I'm in this space where I can help you, and I'm in this space where I can be helped, right? So even if you help somebody and they never help you in return, somebody else in that space probably will, right? It's this, it's forming an environment where you know you can be helped and you know you can easily help other folks. I hope I'm making that clear. And so I think we can turn the internet into this sort of network more broadly, right? By creating more and more of these types of networks. So all this brings into the next point I wanted to talk about is this idea of a process, right? During this conversation on the Discord, you know, they were like, you know, looks like something, they were saying to me, it looks like I'm looking for, like, I just want to be in the time when everything is complete already, when we're already living in a better world and it's easier to do X, Y, Z or whatever. But we don't live in that world yet. You just have to do these things. You have to, if you find somebody that wants to be connected, you connect them and this, that, and the other. You give, you know, you help where you can and you trust the process. And I definitely understand what they're coming from with all that. I'm like, yeah, sure. And I'm already doing a lot of that too. And that's fine. I understand that. But at the same time, that really made me think about this. It's like, what is the process, right? Especially in like these spaces where we're trying to create a better world, and we have, especially like in an anarchist space, I think, you know, other folks, they have like Marxists and anything like that. They might have the grand plan or whatever the stages. I don't know how they term it these days. But the big problem with that is that there is no, you know, end spot. There is no like stages of development, right? It's going to be a constant thing that we do. It's like a constant. It's a process that you're constantly doing, right? It's a horizon that you'll never reach, but it's still worth doing because, you know, it's enjoyable to do that process and it's helpful and it's good, right? That's a big reason why I like anarchism above pretty much any other, you know, ideal, right? It makes sense. But the problem though with anarchism specifically, it's still true with pretty much any other cause or mechanism, if you want to call it, that wants to do something better, is that there is no real process. People like to say trust the process, but the process often is not well defined. It's not really clear what you have to do or what you're supposed to do or what the results are or whatever, of how to create a better world. I drink some water. Yeah, I let that go. Hear me drink so you can think about that as I drink. I'm a fool. But anyways, so I think what that creates is this thing where you're like, yeah, trust the process, you know, just keep just doing good work, you know, or you have all these aphorisms like, if you want to change the world, start with yourself, you know, all this stuff like that. And don't get me wrong, I'm not making fun of this or anything like that. These are all good advice, right? This is all good stuff. This is true. But the problem is that I feel is not clear, it's not actionable enough, right? My own, like, I feel like a big reason why it's so easy for me to procrastinate, for instance, on certain big projects that I have, is that I'm not sure it's going to help, Like, where is it going to go? Where is it, you know, not only do I have this almost imposter syndrome, it's like, am I the right person to do this? Like, can I even do this? It's also this idea of, like, where is this going? Or not where is this going, but, like, how will it get there? Yeah, that's the issue I'm facing. Like, how will it get there? I'm not really sure, right? And I've had this feeling for a very long time. Like, in my first book, in the book that I wrote about myself, like, my own autobiography or whatever, the cover is this mountain. And I'm, like, in this river, this cold river, and staring at this giant mountain in front of me. And on top, I can see, like, a version of myself with, like, the stars over my head or whatever. And it's meant to depict the feeling that I have, where I have an idea where I want to go. Like, I have the direction I want to go, but I have no idea how I'm going to get there. I don't know how I'm supposed to climb this vast mountain to get there. And, of course, you want to do so, you know, one step at a time, as they say. You do a little bit at a time, you know. Eat the elephant one bite at a time, blah, 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 right? Which is true. It's great, yes. But at the same time, and this is something I've learned as I'm hiking more and doing my activities and playing games and stuff like that, you can't just depend on that, right? You can't just be like, oh, one step at a time, blah, blah, blah. You have to educate yourself. You have to have an idea, at least, of how you're going to do it, right? So, for instance, as in my job, right, we have these clients come in, giant clients, you know, the ones I can talk about, like Delta, one of our biggest clients that we've had. But not, that's not the, we've had many other clients on the same size or bigger than Delta. Think about that for a second. Delta Airlines is one of our clients, right? And we're like a 15-person team, right? So, like, it's huge. It's a huge thing, right? And when we work with these clients, they have this idea of what they want to accomplish, right? But we don't be like, oh, yeah, that's the idea. Now let's do it one step at a time until we get there. Trust the process. Like, no, we created a process that is actually definable, that's clearly, you know, defined, that's clearly stated, that we can communicate not only to ourselves, but to our clients, to anybody else that works with us. So we have a clear idea of how to actually accomplish this goal, how to actually build what we want to build, the solution, right? And a lot of that, honestly, I've helped create a lot of this process myself, right? It's funny because it's basically UX design, right? A lot of it is based on that because that's what I learned. But, and this is something I mentioned in the chat too, is like we need a process, or I didn't put it like that, but I think we need a process like UX design, all right? So in UX design, you have this broad process, right, of like essentially talk to people, you know, understand the problem. So that's like your research phase and this, that, and the other. Come up with some solutions, or rather design the solution, essentially, right? And you have different ways of doing that. Test it out, get feedback, iterate on it, deploy it, right? That's roughly the process. And you can say it in different ways or whatever, but that's roughly the high-level process. And that's true for, again, that's UX design in general, right? That's true for pretty much any type of product development process. That's basically the process, right? But within that, there's a huge amount of variation in how to, in like a sub processes to achieve that process, right? To carry that out, right? Like in my organization, there's a number of things that we do that's specific to our industry, that's specific to our specific organization even, right? For instance, because we work in XR, it's very difficult to test things because most people don't have access to these devices. And so we have to, you know, create, you know, basically like high-level storyboards and visual storyboards and, you know, this, that, and the other to test that. Or we have to create like these user groups and whatever, not even user groups, but like stakeholders and stuff like that. We talk to stakeholders and have them test this specific thing. Getting too much into details, but the point is there are other processes that we do in order to achieve this larger process. So not only is there a process, there's the process, but there's also smaller processes to get to the bigger one, and all for the point of getting to the end goal of achieving this ambitious solution, this ambitious goal, right? So what's the process for changing the world, right? What's the process for if you're an anarchistic, you know, person, or even if you don't believe in anarchism, whatever reason, you know, even if you just want to accomplish something in your life that makes the world a better place in some way, right? What's the process for it, right? Many of us don't really have this process. We just have an idea of tools or techniques that we can do, right? For instance, we have this idea of like mutual aid. We have this idea of community building. We have this idea of creating nonprofits and volunteers and doing protesting and, you know, just a number of things, right? All these different things are tools or techniques or mechanisms or things that you can do, activities or whatever that you can do to ideally create a better world. But it's not really structured into an overall process. It's not structured, or it doesn't have an overall structure per se, right? And I think that's a mistake, because like once again, that means that you don't really have a clear idea of how to achieve the goal that you want to achieve, and you don't have the mechanisms of actually testing to see if you have achieved it, if you've gotten to that point, right? A big part of the design process, or in specifically my process at my job, is, you know, in the beginning we set out the goal, we define what the goal is, and have a clear idea of what the success metrics are. Like, how do we know we've done this well? And this is super important for our industry, for XR, because a lot of times, you know, people either don't believe that XR is meaningful or is going to do much, or on the other hand, they try to test it on this very small like part of their company, and you know, it kind of hamstrings things. And so we have to both show that this can be so much more ambitious. Like, we can help your entire training, department or whatever, like be 50%, you know, more efficient, or this, that, and the other, help people like be safer on the job, this, that, and the other, right? We have to communicate these things, but we also have to prove it, right? And so some ways we do that is if the company is super, super skeptical, is to have a proof of concept, right? So we create a really simple proof of concept that shows people what's possible. And so when they try it, they're like, oh, I see, this is how this can work. This is how this can help, right? And then when we build it out, we start with a phase one, with like a version of the bigger goal. Like, initially you may have all these ideas, ambitions, and things like that, but we start with the smaller part, not really the smaller part, but we start with the basics first. The thing that's going to make the most impact with the least amount of complexity, right? So that we can deliver something in a maybe 3 or 4 months, right? Or at least at the most 6 months, right? So you have this tight deadline-ish, and we can, based on what's feasible for us, that's the other side of this, right? We don't just do something that like is super crazy and have no idea how to get there. Like, we do something that we know we can achieve, and there are some elements of that we're not sure we can do, but we can experiment. We put that into the plan. We're like, okay, we're gonna have to experiment with this feature and that feature and see if it's possible. If it's not, then we can fall back to this, or, you know, change the scope or whatever. But yeah, all that to say that we have these various mechanisms to achieve the goal and to do the thing, right? We do the thing. And then once we do, we get those results, and that shows them, oh, wow, this really works, right? It actually does X, Y, Z, like you said, even better, it does way more than you thought it did. And so now they come back to us and like, let's do a bigger and better phase two, right? More details, or more complexity, more scope, you know, more money. Now we have a bigger thing. We can help more people. Awesome, right? What is that process for anarchism? Or what is that process for pretty much any movement, you know, that wants to create a better world? I'm not sure yet, right? This is why I wanted to put this forth. I think is going to have to look at nature, because nature is like the biggest scale we can see. It's a system that affects billions, if not trillions, of other species, and we are a species of 8 billion people, and we affect the entire world at this point. And so we have to have a system, a process that also operates on that scale. At the same time, you have to also recognize that scale is itself a problem. Scale should not be the solution, right? It should not necessarily be the goal, because even in nature, there is no part of the system that scales to everything. It's more like there's a whole bunch of smaller things, right, that add up to the bigger thing. And it only achieves scale through emergence, right? It achieves these bigger complexities through the emergence of a whole bunch of smaller things coming together, right, to create that larger effect, that larger system. So I think if we are to kind of play this out, let me see if I even have the time. I have to go soon. I do not have the time. I'm just gonna have to leave you guessing. No. Yeah, I'm gonna walk home, but I have some very broad ideas. Again, I don't really know what the process should be yet, but I think even recognizing that we need a process is super important, because it helps you to figure this out, right? And a big inspiration for this is like when you're doing, like, a lot of artists and designers who are kind of newer to the space assume that you don't need a process, that you shouldn't need a process, that the process is going to limit your creativity, your freedom. But any experienced artist or creator in general will tell you, no, a process really helps you be more free and be more creative, because it helps you to have this structure of how to go about things, so that you're not constantly guessing at what to do, when to do it, and all this other stuff, and stressing out. So similarly, I think as we're building a better future, we need to have this process in place. And I think a big aspect, you know, the big elements of process is something that is simple. It starts relatively simple, but is modular. It's something that you can put things in and out of, right? A process is not rigid. It's not this one thing that you have to do this exact way every single time. It's an overarching idea. Right, overarching steps that you take and that help you to move forward towards your goal, and it's something that you iterate upon, that you, like, the process that we use today at my job changed from where it was before a year ago, right? Because we learned lessons along the way to make the process better, and we change it almost every time for different clients. Not broadly, we still have the broad scopes down, but some of the details does change based on the specific use case and client and all this other stuff. So similarly, I think we're going to have to create a process based on the overarching goal, based on the overall overarching, you know, mechanisms in place, meaning the people that's going to be doing this sort of work, the people that we want to help with this sort of work, and the tools that we have available to us to this sort of work. All of that should play into the process. And what I mean by nature, by looking at nature as a inspiration for that, is, again, looking at, for instance, I love trees, so I'm gonna come back to that, the fungal network, is we see that trees have a method of communicating and establishing resources, so that can be a big goal. Like, that basically is not exactly a proof of concept, but it's a proof of, it's something that we do too. It's like feasibility and designability. Like, you know, this is the workable solution, right? Like, when we design something for a client, we may not know exactly how to do it, but we look at examples of either things we've done or things we've seen in other places as inspiration that this sort of thing can be done, right? Similarly, because we can look out in nature and actually see real examples of real living beings being able to communicate on a large scale, being able to give and receive resources on a large scale, and on a sustainable scale, and that it works, it has been working for billions of years, and that shows you this sort of thing can be done. The question is, how can we do it? Right? So that becomes the next part of the process of, like, okay, this is the overarching goal, this is one of some of the inspirations. Now, we have to think about, like, how do we achieve that thing, right? I think a big part of it is going to be experimenting. It's going to be creating little areas where you can show that this sort of thing can work. Again, the proof of concept, right? And so that's going to be like, okay, if you're in a small area, how can we build a very small scale version of this? Of, like, you know, living in a house, or living in a neighborhood or an apartment complex or something, in which you can, you know, give and receive resources and communicate more effectively and all this other stuff, right? I think another aspect of that is going to be how to do this with people who don't live close to each other, with people who simply live in a, or who only communicate on things like Discord, right? So it's going to be figuring out, is there even an example of this? This is going to be much harder to solve because I'm not sure if there is an example of this in nature, right? The closest thing we might see is how like the sands in the Sahara Desert affect the give nutrients in a way to the soil over here in America, right? Or the air, or the all the moisture in the forests, the Congo forest or the Amazon forest, affects other places around the world, right? Or the water temperatures, you know, and the glaciers affects the water temperatures in Africa or whatever, right? Like we do have these types of global scales. So maybe that means for us, in order to help people on a larger scale, right, we're going to have completely different systems that work a little bit differently than just a direct, you know, peer-to-peer community or ability. Or maybe not, right? Because because on the internet, we have this ability to directly communicate with people no matter where they're at around the world. So maybe we can still have a micro, a fungal network type of system, right, where you can like have a way to send people resources around the world. But the question is, you know, can you do that sustainably? Can you do that reliably? You know, all this other stuff. I don't know. All that to say, I think this is possible, and I think this will help a lot with helping us to build better futures more efficiently, right? Capitalism isn't the only ones that get to be efficient, right? efficiency is important. But of course, it's always important to recognize that efficiency is not the goal, right? It's not the goal to be efficient, period. The point is to be efficient at a certain thing, at a meaningful, you know, thing that is actually helpful. A big problem with capitalism is that it uses efficiency for efficiency's sake. Like, we just need to be more productive, right? In order to get that money up, that dollar up. But it's like, for what? Like, what are you going to do with the dollars? Like, what are you going to do with more productivity? And there's no real answer. It's just because more is better, right? Because growing is better, right? Because, right, there's this assumption that you just do more and that's better. But that loses the plot. The point is supposed to be to distribute resources to help people. And yet, we do not see that. And so we need to have systems in place to remind ourselves of that constantly. Like, for instance, at my job, once again, it can be easy for certain, especially in tech, for people to build a product that is cool or that is, you know, whatever, but loses the plot of like helping the people, the end users. And so some of the things that we do to help with that is, number one, have people that actually care about, you know, really helping other people. But also number two is having regular increments or frequencies where you go back and talk to the end users, you talk to the stakeholders, or rather the subject matter experts, right? Talk to the people who have the problem and understand more about the problem and why they're having it and what it's costing them and this, that, and the other. And so as you're implementing this, you write those down in the storyboard, in the thing that you're creating, right? So for me, like whenever I create a storyboard, I write at the very top, the summary, this is the problem, right? And this is why. And then whenever you're having meetings about what features to put in, what to cut out, you always go back to, okay, this is the problem that we need to solve. So we have to keep this feature in because, you know, even though it's hard, because this is the main part of the problem that people have. So we can't cut that. We can cut some of this other stuff that's not that important, or it's not really that we thought was cool, but it's not really going to be towards the problem, or, you know, come back to it at a later phase. But we have to make sure we achieve this central goal, this goal at the top here. And so that has to be an important part of every step of the process. Every decision that you make has to be centered around the people that you're helping and the problem that they're having. So as we're creating these solutions to build better futures and all this other stuff, we have to constantly have in the process, right, moments when you are centering the people that you're supposed to be helping, right? Talk to those people, get quotes or you know, summaries or whatever of their problems. Put that at the top. Every time you make a decision of something that you have to cut or add or this, that, and the other, you have people or things that help you be reminded of what you're supposed to be doing there. And then, of course, you know, test. I think that's probably always going to be important. No matter what kind of process that you have, you're going to have to test it, see if it works, iterate on it, so on and so forth. So, yeah, that helped a lot, I think, for me to get at what I'm trying to do here. And maybe, it's funny because I mentioned this maybe months ago. It's like I'm starting to see the world through a design lens. And maybe that's a bad thing. But I also think that that's a very helpful thing as well. If you disagree, though, I would love to hear other perspectives. Like, what are other processes that are not in the design space that can be helpful as inspirations for this, right? For building better futures. You know, maybe there are elements of the software design or software development process or project management process that are, honestly, they seems all related to me in terms of design, in terms of the design process, but whatever. Or maybe there's like a teaching process or like pedagogy, you know, that could be a good process to look at for building better futures. Yeah, so I would love to hear what other people think. I'm going to be working on this some more, I think, and try to create a visual tool for this. That's something I've started to realize that I want to see more of. It's just become really hard for me to write because I'm a inherently visual person, even though I don't really see images in my mind that very well. But I think in a sort of, it feels to me like visual, but maybe it's more like graphical or something. I don't know. But it feels to me like visual. I'm a visual person. I like to see things when I'm thinking about things. So I get tired of writing because it doesn't feel very visual for me. So I really want to create more videos and stuff like that. So I need to just stop being scared of doing that and just do it. So this is hopefully a push for me to do that. But yeah, once again, thanks for listening. Thanks for thinking with me. Let me know what you think. Let me know what you want to do and how you think you can build better worlds and what we can do to make the world a better place. And have a great day. See ya. Bye-bye. Oh, wait. As always, don't forget to be... don't be afraid to be radical. Don't be afraid to be revolutionary. Keep loving yourself. You know, I love that phrase too. These phrases. So, yeah. Do that too. Have a great day. See ya. Bye-bye.